should come on. We're starting to record, and then you press the again to record.
Yes, can I just introduce, we've got a new colleague with us today. I think the committee knows virtually all the other representatives of the department, but Teresa Roth, she's not new to the committee, she's actually been in the committee before, but she's going to assist in the presentation, doing an overview of the board. She's one of the directors, principal, state law advisors in the last section. He will take private responsibility for chairing in the afternoon, though he will intervene as and when necessary. There's no need for him to put his hand up. We're partly meant to facilitate discussion as well. Over there to Derby, Sagane, and Lawrence Bassett, and his team. Welcome, Shireen, you know, and hello. How are you? Fine, thank you. Over to you. Shall we also mention one in-house matter? We have Bonani Romano here, who is standing up to assert his presence, and rightly so. He's probably going to join our committee next week. That's right, Bonani. Yeah, Bonani is committee secretary for public enterprises for now. And JJ knows wherever I go, people flock behind me, and he's interesting to me. It's nothing I can do about it, but he's a lawyer by training, and so he's very useful and valuable.
To all the delegates here, to chapter something by Eden Macron. We understand, Chair, that one bit will give a brief overview of the bill. That is the first question. What I will give, Chair, I will give this kindly the general policy framework, policy of the bill. Where we come from, what to achieve the final decision. I've got few slides that I've prepared for the session. And my team will add upon that after I've presented the slides, then we can take it from there. Basically, what is in the book picks up from the bill those kind of policy aspects that need to be covered. We start basically by acknowledging that the national justice system is of very ancient origin. In terms of the Black Arbitration Association 1929. There was national justice before then. And where we come from now is that the whole system was regulated from 1929 by the Black Arbitration Act. And the features of that system, dispensation, was that it was at a time when there was a separate dispensation for Africans and for whites. It was at a time when the governance system was steeped into segregation policies. As a result, the BAA not only provided for the national court, but it provided for a variety of administration mechanisms for Africans, both those who reside in rural areas and those who reside in urban areas. At the heart of the system, there were specialized courts which were intended to serve Africans. We had the commissioner courts, which were largely the counterpart of magistrate courts, and we had the chief courts, as they were called by then, which are the national courts, etc. And both the chief courts operated largely under the oversight and the supervision of the commissioner's courts. In 1986, the special courts for Africans were abolished. The commissioner's courts were abolished, and the magistrate courts were extended over all areas to cover all races. The chief courts were not abolished. They were left intact. That was after the Huta Commission, which had recommended some alignment of the judicial system. Still in 1929, the act was kept alive, the Black Action Act of 1929. It has remained operative till now, and the main key features of that act is that it provides for selective jurisdiction. Special courts, as they exist now, they can only deal with aspects that involve or affect Africans, like within the kind of national communities. it does not have extended jurisdiction over and above those tax purposes. Secondly, it can only deal with property that relates that is owned by applicants and has been in the international community. Until 1994, the court, after the commissioner's court was abolished, the master court took appeal oversight over national court. And how the system operates is that any matter could be heard by a national court, but where the national court has imposed a sentence for imprisonment, it could be confirmed by a master court. That the chief had to take the matter to a master court here to satisfy himself or herself. That it was an appropriate sentence that would then be committed to prison in terms of that. But that system was abolished by the constitutional dispensation because of the various aspects of this legal representation and best practice that are found in the constitution. What is very critical is that the whole system from its inception was mainly established to promote restorative justice and reconciliation. It was never intended to be a retributive form of adjudication. It was never. Historically, there were never prisons which were built for such an occurrence. They were there to harmonize peace within the community as well. It is the PAA, the Freedom of Addition Act, which brought the element that where chiefs had committed a perpetrator to prison, there would be an opportunity for a magistrate to come to confirm that commitment so that person spends the sentence. Before the PAA, that dispensation was not there. It was always a system that was intended to maintain peace, to promote social cohesion, and to promote reconciliation. Now, why that point is important is because the current policy framework on the Central Court Bill, as we have it now, seeks to revive those elements of restorative justice, of reconciliation, of social cohesion. It moves away from the retributive approach of the conventional court. The conventional courts are prosecutors whose duty and function are to establish the guilt of an accused person beyond any reasonable doubt, and once it has been established, then there is an imprisonment or sanction listening to, which obviously will be prescribed by an act or so. The special court, in its personal favor, its view is to promote communal respect, social cohesion, reconciliation, and peace and harmony within the community. Therefore, the accused person, as is perceived in the special court, stands in a different position as accused person in a mandate court, as those courts said. In fact, hence, in the persons who are here will confirm with you that they don't have a true accused person in the sense that was presented at the court today. Hence, we have elements of not acquittal or not conviction. If the accused, the complainant, is not satisfied of that, if he cannot convince the special court of the violation of a particular imbalance or relationship, etc., the court can still make an order against the person who brought the complaint to your court, etc. It works vice versa because the intention always to make sure that there's peace and stability and harmony between the parties before the court. Now, that's why we seek to address the situation in the bill, that the special court should be perceived to be different from the conventional court. When you look at Chapter 8 of the Constitution, it lists you the hierarchy of the courts that are in existence. The Constitutional Court, the High Court, the Labor, the Specialized Court, the Master Court, etc. And it goes on to say any other court that may be established by an act of Parliament or so. We perceive the Constitutional Court to be a system that is provided for under the Constitution, especially under Section 34 of the Constitution, which provides for any form of dispute resolution that can be regulated and be established. So the view, the special court should not be seen in the view of the conventional court in terms of Chapter 8, and the section 35 of the section 35 of the it must not be seen that it must be seen as a system that is involved, that is evolving, and that is established to manage and resolve disputes in terms of section 34. What is critical to that in this niche is that it's alternate dispute resolution mechanism. It must deal with matters which ordinarily should not go to a formal court, which can be resolved out of the court system. The special court system has an in-based strong view of the what we normally call in the normal sense the pre-trial processes. So it should be able to deal with matters in a way that they can resolve before the formal judicial process are being in engaged also. And once satisfaction is achieved around that area, the matter ends there. It doesn't proceed beyond that kind of aspect. There are debates from the submission instance, and which I think they'll dominate part of this discussion, whether one should be able to opt out or to go to a court, formal court, once the matters that have been dealt with the Supreme Court have been finalized or are ongoing, etc. And those are some of the aspects that we will engage on and discuss today. But what must be seen, the special court was initially should not be seen to be part of the formal of the mainstream court that we have them today. The other thing that is to promote invisibility, Chair, is to make sure that there's a standardization and uniformity across all the provinces, across all the areas and social communities. As we have now, we have separate pieces of legislation applying in separate parts of the country. And that emanates from the past, where we had the different homelands and independent states implementing their own systems. After 1994, with the rationalization of the legislation, those administrations were taken over by provinces. However, there were still disparities and inconsistencies. So the purpose of this thing is to establish a uniform or a framework mechanism through which whatever traditional courts, as they operate in different provinces, they need to adhere to at a uniform status. And that will cover aspects like the basic fair processes that must be undertaken by every court, sentences or sanctions that may be given by every court, offences or disputes that may be had by every court. So those are issues that must be provided for nationally. So there's a sense of uniformity also. The system does not start with the court. As I said, this is not actually a court system. It's a national justice system. When you deal with it, it starts right at the core of the family unit. The matter, a dispute, will be resolved firstly at the family head. If it's not resolved there, it will be taken to a head man or head woman. If it's not resolved there, it will be taken to a chief or senior national leader who will try to resolve that issue without even calling the court. If not resolved there, that will then go to a special court, IBAC, LAPOSA, MAPOSA. How it operates the system is that if a senior national leader has not been able to resolve that matter at level, then an invitation is then issued out to the members of the community, of that special community, and they convene, and they sit down. Everybody participates. They hear a dispute. Parties participate and witnesses, and thereafter, once the community and that convention have decided how best to resolve the matter, every single speaker, the international leader, facilitates the discussion as a presiding officer. It is not a requirement that the international must be there in all the matter. In some other instances, the international leader may be represented in that hearing by his or her advisor. Or members of the royal family. And after the discussion, after the matter has been had, the president may pass over sanctions which have been agreed to. It operates separately and differently from the formal court system. And that's customary law. This does not in any way seek to rewrite customary law. it seeks to enhance what customary law says. It recognizes customary law as existing, but also identify areas of customary law that needs to be developed to be brought in consistent with the Constitution. We acknowledge that customary law from its own primitive origin could have overlooked aspects of equality, aspects of gender equality and children, etc. This bill seeks to identify those aspects and facilitate the development of customary law to be consistent with the Constitution. Therefore, what is seen, what normally is perceived and seen as a contradiction between customary law values and constitutional law system, should not be seen that light. They should be seen to be areas which need to be developed to be brought in line with the constitutional dispensation. And the court is helping around this aspect. We know that in the Mosaneke case, for example, the court ruled out a customary law rule which allowed inheritance only to be from the male ascendant, etc. That's the example of issues with customary law that needs to be developed. We know the current is a case which is subject to care at the criminal court, where a woman is challenging her right to be appointed to attend her soul in Limpopo. And the court, when it deals with the appliance customer law system, and will look if to extend that principle of customer law rules undermine the Constitution, it will strike it down to allow the customary law to develop. The most important development after 1994 is that every court must apply customary law when that law is applicable. So if at any mandate court, at any high court, at a constitutional court, a matter comes there related to customary law, the court cannot deal and may not deal with that matter in terms of Roman Dutch law or English law, etc. It must apply customary law. It's a big challenge because more than half of our judicial officers, etc., are not calling customary law. And obviously, one of the interventions that will happen is that the special leaders, as persons who are custodians of the customary law and cultural norms, should be able to assist the constitutional court in terms of those methods, either at assessment or whatever kind of participation there. And there are also scholars within the system will be able to provide in-depth analysis of customary law principles. The matter in the customary, on which relates customary law, cannot be decided in terms of common law or Roman Dutch law or any other applicable law. Customary law has got an equal status like any other law as a law of this country. That's what the Constitution gives. And that's a challenge that we hope that through this bill we'll try to seek to address. What the bill seeks to also propose, Chair, is that it must propose for the senior personalities and the King and the Queen to be designated by the Minister for them to be able to exercise any function arising out of this Act. Their designation is not basically, it must not be confused with the process of installation. A personal leader or chief ascend to a throne through death. Kosala can never be a chief because my father was never one. And he can never be appointed or elected as a chief. It's different from the chair. People as they must be appointed to a party list also. Personal leaders are chiefs. Yes. Personal leaders ascend to a throne through death. Now, what is chiefs to do? This policy is to ensure that all arrangements related to accountability are being brought into effect. It does not mean that if you are a personal leader by death, you will be able to deal with everything that the Act wants you to do. So the designation seeks to ensure that once every personal leader who is born as such is given the opportunity to acquaint himself or herself with this Act through the necessary training program that will be implemented, for which government will support and sponsor. And once there's that element of satisfaction, then the minister will be the designation. And once every national leader does not comply with the provision of the Act, the truth should be with God. It's an element of accountability. It's got nothing to do with the installation. Now, it coincides with the premier. First, the premier recognizes the national leader. The royal family will choose after when the throne becomes vacant. The royal family identifies and chooses and selects a traditional leader. The premier of a province, in terms of the government framework legislation, recognizes the traditional leader. The minister of justice designates the traditional leader. And the differences should be seen in the context of the training and accountability. That's why, of course, in the annual consultation with the traditional leaders, we did explain the principles that we seek to achieve in terms of the suspect. There is a code of conduct that is administered by provinces that lays the traditional leaders, etc. We don't see that this through this legislation should provide a separate mechanism. What we seek to do is that the very same code of conduct should be made applicable to all areas for which traditional leaders are responsible. And to extend that there are areas shortcomings relating to admin of justice, there will then be an interaction between our department and the premier to make sure that those shortcomings are being addressed through necessary inquiries, investigations, etc. The minister will not establish a separate process different from the one that the premier does. So this provides a dynamic interface relationship between the minister of justice and the premier relating to conduct and accountability. I've talked about training, Chair. What we seek to do and what we commit ourselves to be as part of the resources that we're going to provide the system, that there will be a training program that will be developed and be managed by justice. Justice College is one of the vehicles for the implementation of the training program. The judicial officers, the magistrates and the judges, etc., are one of the people who are going to assist the training, because this is part of the whole system of access of justice. And therefore, to extend that traditional leaders need to be empowered in terms of different areas, we'll make sure that becomes facilitated by that training program. We're also excited to hear something that the committee also suggested, that the judicial executive should also have traditional leader as part of the council. We think as this one of the forces should help that kind of building and strengthening customary law. So there need to be a very interactive relationship between traditional leadership institution and the judicial system of the country. Chair, this is one of the most, the criminal and civil justice is one of the other contentious aspects that is going to be brought during our discussion today. Firstly, Chair, I said traditional leadership is of ancient origin. In the past, in fact, there's very thin line between what they perceive to be criminal and civil disputes in the traditional context. I can give an example. You know, if you've got a dog which transgresses into a neighbor's grazing land, etc., it's a civil matter which you can claim for the cost of the damage, etc. Stock theft is a criminal and a civil matter, etc. Over years, matters of less serious criminal offenses have been dealt by traditional leadership. Issues of criminal injury where somebody insults one over the fence, they can be criminal matters, they can be civil disputes. Traditional leadership has been able to deal with those aspects. There has never been a line, a distinct line between what is criminal and what is civil. What has been in the making is that any conduct that seeks to cause imbalance, that infringes persons' rights in whatever way, even if it amounted to criminal conduct, to the extent that the traditional leader could resolve that matter and bring harmony and peace between the different parties, they had originally inherently that power to do that. What we do is we don't take that power away from them. We don't say that if somebody commits a criminal offense, which can be dealt with, or which falls within the jurisdiction of the Transcendent Dealer, that Transcendent Dealer should fold their arms and say, no, no, this one can only be dealt by the court. They should be able to deal with them. Because they are dealing with them, maybe 50 and many of them are 50, and they're dealing with them. There are two values that come from this system. One, they absorb the pressure that currently the magistrate courts are facing. Because the conventional courts are overloaded with cases. If all cases that even involve the theft of a soap or chicken at the special committee was going to await to go to a magistrate court, we would not be able to deal with complex matters at the court today. But two, the prosecutor in the court may look at the matter and may throw it out. I don't think that it's in the interest of this house that a prosecutor and a magistrate should spend 8 hours or put the case 10 times for a pair of cigarettes. And even after the accused person who wants a legal representation, the accused person says, yes, the legal aid was appointed an attorney. The state pays the attorney for sitting there, 3,000 rand a day. The issue being dealt with there, 100 rand a day. So the figure will fall out, not because it's not an offense, but because of the balances and the measures to be taken to resolve that case are so huge that you undermine the efforts of the state before the matter. Now let me tell you the challenge. What happens currently, those matters are withdrawn and that's the end of the process. When questions come here, they tell you that out of the 1 million kills they received, 350,000 are withdrawn annually. We don't know which cases are being withdrawn, but most of the cases which are being withdrawn are those cases which the prosecutor would have a feeling that they could not be resolved through the mechanics of the state. Now, the special justice system is there to absorb this matter. I have known that one argument which have came in the media recently was that if you provide for this system, the traditional leaders in the traditional leadership system, it means any person who stays in the urban area, in Belleville, in Cape Town, will not be able to get the same privilege or access issues. Because it will mean that if somebody steals a soap, where 25 friends from ShopRite in Belleville, that person runs a risk of one getting arrested, getting prosecuted, getting a conviction record, compared to somebody in the international community who will not be exposed to a very same kind of danger. We are saying, to the extent that we have started this process of social leadership, this process should give us a model that should inform our court approach in other urban areas. We cannot take all cases to court. We cannot do that. Constitutional. Every person has got their right to have his or her dispute brought by court. Constitutionally, every person can take a claim of 1,000 rand to the High Court. Constitutionally, anyone can go to the Constitutional Court to dispute a claim of 500 rand. But no right thinking person will seek an advocate to go and lodge a civil claim for 1,000 rand at the High Court. That's why they go to the Constitutional Court. They don't go there because they want they cannot go to the High Court. They go there because there is an opportunity created by government for people who want to access justice to go to the Small Claims Court. We don't say they must. We say there is Small Claims Court. If you have any claim up to 7,000 rand, you are willing to go to the Small Claims Court. We say to the Special Court, if you have a dispute amounting to an offense of theft of 2,000 rand or less, you can go there. And if the system is efficient and effective, no person will go to a police station, open a case, and the matter be postponed 5 times because the court is busy with other matters. If there's a system that can resolve that dispute the same afternoon, in the international community. And the right comes from the person. We are saying, we don't say the police must not take a criminal case for 500 cents. We say, if the Transnational Justice System is operative and effective, and it helps resolve those matters, people out of their own volition will go to them. And this system seeks to do that. It seeks to revive the Transnational Court, align them with the Constitution, empower them, capacitate them, give them the necessary training, so that they become a service to the community, the transnational community. Eight of the 9 provinces, Chair, they have transnational communities. By the way, Gauteng got there in 2005 with the Constitution 12th Amendment, which annexed certain areas which were previously in the transnational setup to Gauteng. So this is a transnational community in Verena. There's a transnational community in Hamilton, which falls under Gauteng in terms of the new provincial boundary. Now, every dispute that happens around that site, that court should be able to exercise that access. So the issue of opting out where they must, etc., we don't see it as an issue that should, because the access, we have been very cautious, because we have always been using the word may. The court may deal with this matter, etc. Because it's a discussion. If somebody thinks, no, I've lost 20 rents from my house, but I think my choice is the court, there's nothing to stop this person. But what we're doing, because prosecutors are withdrawing several cases, because they are of the view that doesn't belong there, there will be a two-way process. If the prosecutor is of the view that the case for the prosecutor can be resolved better, quickly, and expediently by the social community, they will send them. Now they'll give you the solution. They won't say now this criminal offense or this dispute does not, I'm not of the view that I'm going to prosecute. They will say, I have read the docket, and this matter can be resolved by a certain leader within this community. I therefore refer this matter to the transnational community. That will also help strengthen the transnational leader. Because what's happening currently in the absence of legislation, there's forum shopping. People go to both places the same day. They open the same case at the police station and go to the transnational leader in the same afternoon. The court, they postpone the case on Saturday, because transnational communities are very accessible. They also work on Saturday, most of them. And they are not bound by the rules of the massive court. This says the court is from 8 to 4. They see that resolve matter as they come. Now, they want to get where they get inspection. And at times, there are instances where they get inspection both. That's why when the magistrate is presiding over a matter, when the complaint says, no, the matter has been held there, the magistrate says, no. This is a different matter. Answer the question. Because it's brought here. Now, this bill is different between the two. The court, the mainstream court, will be able to send matters to a certain community. And the community will be encouraged to institute matters at a certain community. And the effectiveness of the scheduling system will open up access for those communities. The issue of opt-out, whatever, we don't see as an issue to arise over some time.
Yes, I know we started 8 minutes late, but can we give you 5 more minutes? Because you've covered the ground very well, actually.
Thank you, Chair. I just took some time on those points. The function, I've already covered with those aspects, that this court will never send people to prison, will never give corporal government punishment. That's been outlawed by the Constitutional Court. They seek to promote restorative justice. They seek to reconcile the party, etc. They will give community services. There will be somebody in the transnational community who have aid will be able to either cleanse the offence, either by paying by penalty, which happens every day, or will be asked to clean some of the public facilities, repair schools, whatever. Those are the sentences that build up communities at the end of the day. I feel that it's one also point that was raised during the consultation process. The views from the transnational leadership have been that we must establish an appeal system within the transnational leaders. And we are also of the view that, in view of the fact that the Constitution are enjoined and compelled, sales request to apply customary law when that law is applicable. There should be no obstacle of magistrate or any other court dealing with the appeal matter in appropriate circumstances. So what they prefer to do is try to establish those circumstances where appeal may be made to a magistrate court. But by and large, it promotes that matter should be resolved and end there as soon as possible. So there will be exceptional cases where appeals will be given. That also relates to reduce. Reduce the constitutional entitlement. Any matter, any person will have right to institute review proceedings where the processes and the proceedings have not been followed in accordance with the law, etc. So that's a standing requirement of the Constitution. From the department side, we opt to provide support services to the special court, so that it could then be able to be supported in terms of issues of sending notices, record keeping, correspondence, etc. And that's what we'll work, we agreed with them that we'll provide support through our market offices that are in the proximity of the international leaders. And these are parts that we've touched. One point I just wanted to close with is the whole issue of infrastructure and budget. The governments, there's been some requests that have been made that there's an expectation from the department to build courts in the sense of building traditional courts and write them traditional courts, etc. Our view is that traditional courts have always been provided with infrastructure for the performance of their functions, politically. So they would not have a separate building for a court, a separate building for criminal affairs, for a separate building. And the provinces under which administratively the social leadership has been supported, they provide those resources. Justice should be able to provide resources that are specific to the function that you assign to the traditional leadership system. And the Minister of Commission has said that to extend that there may be a requirement for any basic structure in terms of the inadequate available one, national government needs to liaise with provincial government to make sure that they are fully supported in terms of infrastructure. So similar with the budget, we should not be allocating as justice a portion of the budget, as housing a portion of the budget, as agriculture a portion of the budget, because we've got functions that are done by such leadership. It will cause an administrative and accountability nightmare. The provinces have got that mandate to provide resources and to administer. And to the extent that there may be specific aspects that fall under justice, we'll then be able within our budget to provide for those resources, but not the generic resources as may be required. And that's how we understood and interpret the rhythm of the government's claims to effect. It says we must provide resources to extend that it is necessary to provide that technical functions by my department also. These are the general views of the thing that we just articulated to kickstart the debate around this very, very important and vital and yet contentious bill that we have presented for the House. Thanks.
Thank you very much, JB. Over then, firstly to members to ask questions on clarity of the book and issues around that and their contributions, and then we will allow whoever wants to from civil society to pay or ask questions as well. Can I just suggest, I'll deal with it in a moment, but the idea is that we don't have public hearings like a conveyor belt system where you come here, you make a submission for 10 or 15 minutes, and then you take the next flight out. The idea is that you engage with each other, the different stakeholders as well, not just the committee members. So those of you who can't stay from 5 to 5 today, please do. I know you've got flights and so on, but please try to stay. All right, let's go over first to the committee members. There's Len who wants to ask a question, Carol, JJ, Imam. Can I just raise one thing? Mr. Delport, Dr. Delport and Mr. J.B. Sivagnoni, they are in another meeting which is looking at the issue of partners, so they won't be here and we formally accept their apologies.
Thank you, Chair. I have five matters we wanted to raise them all at once. And one is one of the constitutional principles is the separation of powers. Now, I see the traditional leaders more towards the executive side than anywhere else. so it needs to resist that matter. Then the other one is, we don't have any law that classifies people today. So who decides who can go to these schools and not? Do you decide yourself or how does it work? The other one is, I see that the court need not keep verbatim records of its proceedings. Now, when you appeal, you have to start the appeal de novo because you have no record of what the witness has said. The other matter concerns procedure, what procedure will the court follow, and also right of appearance, who has the right of appearance, who prosecutes, and that sort of thing. Then lastly, you think that they will not be able to give prison sentences. Now, what happens if one does not comply with the sentence of the traditional court, which is normally a sentence has a prison sentence as an alternative, so how do you enforce the sentence? Thank you.
Unless some of the questions of the other members overlap with that. Okay. So, and also, members will have time also to engage with the department over the next few months. So we should also encourage members of the public to actually ask, because I think if people are clear about the bill, they'll be clear as to about submissions they need to do. The other thing that I have explained to you is that the department must also seek to reply to issues raised by the public so that people know what your point of view is. Our point of view as Parliament will only emerge over the next few months.
I'm with a team here who can ask Lawrence Bassett. I think it's from our legal division, legal drafting. Teresa Ross, next to Lawrence, also from the legal drafting unit. Advocate Sherin Said from Viral Groups in Court Services, and Ms. Gordon Cook from Court Services. And they can please pick up any question that they've been raised, and can pick up on the other one which have been left out.
I'll answer a few that come to mind immediately, so I won't go necessarily in the same order as the questions have been put on procedure. I think it's pretty clear in the clause 9 of the bill says that the procedure at any proceedings in the judicial court must be in accordance with customary law and custom, but it does give the minister the power to prescribe regulations dealing with procedure that is considered to be necessary. That in brief. On the classification of persons, I think that was the second question, and I'm going to refer you to clauses 5 and 6. That deals with civil disputes and criminal disputes. The bill simply says that I don't think that there's any that the bill simply says, for example, as far as criminal disputes are concerned, the traditional court may hear and determine offences brought before the court if the offence occurred within the area of jurisdiction. So there's no reference to race or if the offence occurred there, the matter can be dealt with there. The same applies as far as civil matters are concerned. If the civil dispute arose in the area of jurisdiction, the matter that matter can be dealt in that area of jurisdiction by the traditional court. Right of appearance, I think Mr. Scorsano already mentioned that. That's also in clause in the no party to any proceedings before the traditional court may be represented by a legal representative, but a person can have a representative that would normally assist a person in a traditional court in terms of customary law. That's also the party to proceedings before the traditional court may be represented by him. person does not comply. That is set out in clause.
Just one point, just pick up the separation of power. We know that social leadership are the integrated form of government. They have an input to do in terms of legislation, in terms of community, in terms of dispute resolution. In the context of this bill, personal leaders are not judicial officers. And they exercise their powers and functions according to them as the leaders of the community. And therefore, the issue of the power should not come into play. And it underscores what I said earlier on. It should be seen as a system itself of integrated governance rather than as an adjudicative or judicial system per se. It links to the judicial system. It does even collaborate with the judicial system, but it should not be seen as a judicial system itself. It complements the judicial system.
Good.
The last point I feel.
The record.
telling you that in accordance with customary law. As I said earlier on, this bill does not seek to change customary law. They don't try to. Customary law is embedded, the treasury is not accepted yet. It just seeks to manage the process. Customarily, an appeal would not, that is not, it's not, it's not, it's not a concept of personal court at all. Because the judgment given, is given by the people, the appropriate decision, they sit down and decide this. So they do have a system, the concept of appeal and review are used interchangeably in the customary law. They don't exist the way we understand them in the constitutional court, where you can appeal on conviction, on court questioning, etc. How we put it, that's why we put it in extreme cases, and we put it where certain orders may be out of bounds, or they may be erroneous or overburdening to a party. This party should have a record. But the court will not basically verify the guilt of the person. Will not give a conviction. Basically, attest itself whether the party who has been given this sanction is this sanction appropriate for circumstances.
Just two. One is it would be very useful to get a document setting out how this changes the existing law, both statutory and customary law. So what changes if this bill is passed as it is, what changes will it bring about to what is actually happening at the moment in the court? So that was the one I don't think necessarily you could answer it now, but a document would be good. The second one was just the costing. Mr. Kofan has spoken about, under that section you spoke about buildings. In the memo, financial implications for the state, it simply says financial implications will result from the implementation of training programs for presiding officers of traditional courts. So in the memo you spoke only about training. Is that it? Training and possible buildings. What else is there? Has there been any costing done to the bill? One of the submissions that I briefly looked at only got now that made reference to, I think it was Joasa, to extreme costs that may hamper the implementation of the bill.
Thank you, Chairman. Finally, this bill will become part of the law. The uniformity of the application of the law is an important principle. I believe, Kusana, you've spoken about, traditional African customary law as if it is monolithic, in South Africa, right? But my perception is, I'm not an expert in this, that there are differences here, right? Differences, and there can be big differences. I mean, the law will, for example, give the power of sanction here, which means that different sanctions could possibly be given, for the same offense, because of the difference in the customary law, right? How are we going to deal with that? How are we going to overcome it?
Thanks,
Chief.
Just in your cyber presentation, you said that domestic violence. You said DVA is excluded from the jurisdiction of judicial courts. But if you look at Clause 5, the only exclusions are constitutional matters, nullity of marriage, custody of minor children, validity of wills, and then disputes relating to property. So my question, just for clarification, what about domestic violence and what about maintenance issues? And flowing from that, many of the submissions that we receive make the point that the bill, in the opinion of people making this submission, entrench patriarchal systems and practices and is not, when it comes to gender equality, is not that the bill is not satisfactory. How would you respond to that?
Tuesday. They will continue until the baby goes on the phone. This committee accepts public hearings all the time. So
worried about time and so on. We'll continue till the 11th of June. Let's finish the members and then members of the public want to ask questions. The speech is using themselves. If they represent their structure, these are rules we are asking. Now, shall we take these questions out? If the court chair wants to come in,
my question would be on consultation about bodies and persons who are consulted. The information we have is that the Law Commission has done extensive studies and consultation of this thing. And in the people they have consulted, it's not clear that they have consulted with the Law Commission and what happened to the process that the Law Commission has done. And the other issue is clause 15, the oath of office. Is it not to demeaning to the status of traditional leadership that you have a king taking an oath of office before the magistrate or the actual magistrate? Do you think that is demeaning to the office of status of traditional leaders? And the other issue that you might respond to, why do you have the whole thing in regulations under clause 21? Are you not respecting the powers of parliament? Because if it is under regulations, then the means of it would be definitely regulation, and that is avoiding the regulation.
Yeah, on the issue of consultation, you know, this we've raised a million times, and you're raising it yet again. I really think there's an obligation on the executive to consult also before they bring them to parliament. Now, you consult with the statutory bodies. National Health Commission, which is good. I'm not quoting what generally fine. The magistrate's fine. But there hasn't been sufficient consultation with the public. And you know, ideally a bill should be gazetted for comment and so on. It saves Parliament a lot of time. And it also means the executive is not hanging in the air, so to speak. There are differences within the portfolio committee on which we need some consensus all the time. I mean, my own view has been, and it's the current of thinking in any case within the majority party, that the executive should consult. So, for example, why didn't you consult not just the traditional leaders, but their subjects as well? There are organizations in those areas. There are organizations like statutory bodies like the Gender Commission and the Human Rights Commission. If you don't want to consult civil society, surely you should consult with the Human Rights Commission and the Gender Commission, which brings me to the Khaisi Lomalito Khaisi and welcome and her team. I see Hank Smith from the Legal Resources Center. And Anita Clark is coming. Welcome to them too. Nkosi Nonkonyada was here. Mario Nkosi Mabunda. It's so far you're still unhappy with the traditional leadership and governance framework, though, which you recall I chaired in the last year of local government. He was very Nkosi Nonkonyada because he was a member of that committee and he represented Conservator and the I think he was a chair of the House at that time. So, you know, he was raising him all the problems. But Niki Tansi has disappeared, I'm sure he'll return. Okay, over to you. I just want some response to the consultation issue, but it overlaps with what, in fact, my co-chair is.
Madam Chair, let me start with the last point in consultation. The South African Law Reform Commission commenced the process long term ago. And we all know that the Law Commission is there to advise government on areas of law reform. And they did the consultation after the discussion document which was published, an issue paper, followed by a discussion document, followed by a bill. The law expects them to initiate a bill on issues where they think that a bill will be necessary. We have all the documents. And they were given to the executive. And the executive then thought that there were few points that needed to be revised in terms of policy. Not to reinvent the wheel. We would not go, that would have undermined the Law Reform Commission. It would not have been ideal to call the very same stakeholders and go down to them and raise the very same issues. We studied everything that they have said. And then we then picked up four or five policy-related issues on the bill and the document. The minister then said, we engage the minister subject task team, of which the Law Reform Commission is part of, to go back and revise those policy issues.
So the bill that we published today, it only consulted on those aspects that emanated from the Law Reform Commission's process, not on the entire process. Within the space given and the capacity, we have done that in the space of 2 years. We just took the Law Reform Commission and picked up those policy issues. One of the issues was the whole issue of the formal cost structure. One of the issues we picked up was that the commission suggested the establishment of a formal cost structure parallel to the mainstream cost, etc. So that was one of the issues. The second issue that was considered then was the whole issue of the support structure to this cost. That they need to be formally mainstream, they run, they have capacity, staff, etc. All these aspects. All we did, we harmonized that report with what the process under the government did, because the bill, it happened concurrently with the process under the KLT of the Law Reform Commission. So there were inconsistencies. So we focus on those areas. Then we have read the submissions which were made by different persons, and we make sure that when we revise those process aspects, we invited those persons and those institutions. So our consultation process was basically with the extractional leadership, but also with some forms of institutions that have made, with the gender commission was part of some of the consultations. The Human Rights Commission were invited. We did receive some written input from some of the institutions, etc. We may not have been consulted widely, but our consultation focus was basically focus on those areas which we thought they needed further refinement. So it's, yes, so it's a part of the... What we did, Chair, we did a costing for, we established a process to cost the training program and the capacity in terms of the officials that will be assigned to assist the court. We obviously that from the bill itself, those are the specific aspects that justice must carry alone. The issue of buildings and all the other things, we agree to them, but we obviously that those are aspects that must be liaise and discuss with provincial government, because they are providing the building for in some of the provinces. Yes. The sanctions and procedures are normally uniform across all the provinces, across all the international courts. Well, some of us, those who were fortunate to study customary law, and also make a visit and do the system, we found that the systems are uniform. What differs mostly is basically the customs that, and traditions that apply different aspects, etc. In another area, for example, if my father has not finished paying lobola, I can still marry. In my culture, I cannot marry a wife until I marry my mother first on behalf of my father. So if I don't, the lobola will never be accepted there until I organize a feast and marry my mother on behalf of my deceased son. Then after that has happened, then I can marry a wife. In another custom, you cannot build for your wife a house within the very home state, because it's a cultural practice where you must allow your elders to welcome them to your house. The elders have only been welcomed at house by your own father. So you cannot go and welcome all those things. Now, in my culture, it may not be an offense. In another culture, wasn't. That's what differs in most of the instances. The actual suspense of customary law. What the bill seeks to address that. And because now, in the past, customary law would be dealt with in terms of ethnicity divide of the country. The bill now says the court deals with people who are residents within the traditional community. 2, who conduct business within the traditional community. 3, who happens to pass through that area? and get some introduction with the practice. Now you may find that there are three people who appear before the traditional leader. The other one was visiting but does not subscribe to particular custom, whatever. The other one is resident there is a particular open committee. Now what the act says, it says where there are different systems appearing to a particular dispute. Firstly, the preference given to the customary law to which if the parties give consensus to the dispute, because they are coming from different. If that's not possible, they use the one which both parties or what the dispute is closely connected with. So those are the areas, and we have to put that, we're not going to provide some challenges, etc. But the question is about the way of dealing with them currently. It happens. And
what about the domestic violence, exclusively the cattle question, and maintenance issues? And Chair, that we might need to give it some thought and provide greater clarity, but the Domestic Violence Act and the Maintenance Act provide quite specifically that those issues must be dealt with in a specific court, and that's the maintenance. So we might want to just... I think I've answered that one, and then Ms. Johnson also asked about the patriarchal perpetuation of that aspect. I think that's dealt with in a number of places, it's dealt with in the guiding principles, maybe not sufficiently enough, but it is mentioned there that that's one of the guiding principles is to move away from that system and to promote gender equality, and it comes out...
The traditional courts have it all split.
No, as I said, think about that. Okay.
Yeah. And what about the king being demeaned, or the queen, as maybe having to swear an oath of abnegation before magistrates? It might well be his or the subject.
We usually look at the issue of practicality. Initially, we thought that the judge should do that of every province, and we thought that in terms of this very little name, that we may get delayed in terms of practicality, etc. But he then tried to provide for a judge or a designated judicial officer by a judge or so, etc. And at the last end, we came to a magistrate. But I think I don't think that we can still provide for. So that's for practicality.
Can you just note that Parliament and this committee in particular, we are not keen on getting into it. They must be minimal. However, we recognize, and we need to debate this, that this is a concurrent power function. The provinces have a role. There's a traditional leadership government framework, or there's a framework legislation. That the customs and traditions differ as the story box that you gave me, whatever we might think about what's being said, that's reasonably accurate, it seems to me. Whether the examples are accurate, there's nothing to say, but the point being made is that the customs and traditions differ, and obviously, whichever area you're in, the predominant customs and traditions will dominate, but if you're in Gauteng, in the area you're saying, and there might be somebody who's Venda and somebody who's Zulu, somebody who is stronger speaking, then, you know, the traditions will differ and they will have to differ in the way the bill says. When we come to that particular point, we deal with that. Can I just say, sorry,
may I respond to the regulations? You've covered it.
It's more an ideological, political point. We're not going to settle that here. We feel very strongly, some of us, that Parliament has allowed the executive to get away for too long. We've been raising this since 1998, and we've been seeking that he's But in this particular respect, there may well be a case for it, but we can engage around it. Will it be something in 1 minute? Okay, thank you very much. Now, can I just say from my side, before I say it open to this? Okay, the public, yes, you want to speak? Introduce yourself. I know you, but the others don't know, but these are not to speak. Now, can I just set the ground rule? One is each of you has been given 15 minutes to speak, and you've got long written submissions. We will read every comma and every full stop of your submission. Between the department and the researchers, Tumisang and Julian, they will check what the department does. A summary, we've been doing this for years. Before you get worried that 15 minutes is not enough. Actually, in the committee last year, 15 minutes have always been standard, and nobody's ever complained. In fact, we've got letters upon letters of confidence in the very many things. But just give you an example. The Child Justice Book. This is what the department did, and we checked. And the NGOs added to. This is all the submissions. Every clause, whatever you say, we will include. and this is a department in the past. So what we do is, those of you who haven't made written submissions, you've got another 14 days to do it. Those of you who want to speak further, you can come at any time with submissions written, and we'll include even verbal submissions as and when appropriate. So we will take you very seriously. The 15 minutes should not be misunderstood. Now, when civil society participants take part, insofar as you can slide in the issues in your 15 minutes, do that. Okay? But if you feel you have to raise the issues now, fine. So you want clarity on the bill, and you want to comment on the bill. That's what you're going to do. Between Mulalani and me, mainly me this morning, Mulalani this afternoon, we will decide whether you would deal with that issue in question time under your particular input. The next step, your name, please.
Thank you so much. My name is Vincent Watapomo. I'm Vincent Watapomo, a magistrate from Johannesburg. I'm a member of JOASA, Judicial Officers Association of South Africa. Just wanted to raise two questions. We had raised them in our submission. Since they are covered here, maybe we do not have reason to say them now in our submission. The first one is in respect of human injury. One offense.
Is that part of your formal submission?
Yes.
Is that part of your formal submission?
Yes.
Then raise it then. We want the clarity on the issues of the bill. Nobodiso, and then the gentleman at the far end.
I just have good morning and good morning to the House. I'm sorry not to observe rules of decorum and very much. I wasn't sure what the system is. A lot of issues that we would like to raise, obviously, we'll raise in our submission. But I have a very serious concern, fundamental concern, that I would like, as rubric, for the Department of Justice to take into consideration to bring some kind of reform. At this point, does customary practice apply at familial level between two or three families? Because the example that was quoted about Lobolo, I would argue very strongly that it actually is at the level of family. At which point does an authority, such as a traditional authority, get involved in those kind of negotiations? Because one of the key concerns that I have is this conflation of areas of where the family in the African context, where family and families, amakai, are supposed to be meeting, and where you have now traditional authority as an area of action. Secondly, the one issue that I raised, that I would like to raise, and I need some clarity, because our submission is based on that, is exactly what are the areas where customary law would apply and would not necessarily apply in the normal public law. Because where it is agreed, if, for example, the bill talks about Schedule 1 crimes, and I want to know, are those necessarily customary law crimes, or could they be integrated in the system? This question is related to the point that was raised by the imam about the uniformity of systems. And I want to put it to this house that even the interpretation that is in the bill, and even the interpretation that we are getting from various officials from the Department of Justice, raises for me a very serious concern about the understanding of the difference between custom, tradition, and family belief as determined by clan. Thirdly, our other concern is related to issues of vulnerability. It is very clear to understand where exactly does the bill stand on issues of gender. I raised this because I was like,
I'm saying to you, those issues are presumably coming up in your submission, okay? Issues of gender and so on. But the first two issues need clarity now. Do you want to say anything else? Because we have to be fair to everybody.
No, that's okay, fine. I'm sorry about that. Yeah. I think that the final issue that we would like to make, we would like to ask, which has just come out of this conversation, is, has the department done sufficient consultation? I hear that the Commission on Gender Equality was consulted. I hear that various civil society organizations were consulted. I hear that say the Law Reform Commission was consulted. But I want to go back to the very same principle that I would assume is used at the front of the department here, that it goes in, a bunch. So where are the people, where are the voices of the people over whom this bill or the law will apply? And I think we need to find a way that has a direct representation of that. Thank you.
There's a person there, and then the last person from the lady in the back. I'll speak loudly. I don't have a mic. Professor Ben Cousins from the University of Western. And I've been doing research on these kinds of issues in KwaZulu-Natal recently. And my question, you were speaking to the mic.
Yeah, okay. My question is, how many traditional courts are there for a traditional community? In the area where I've been doing fieldwork, in Singa, people handle firstly at the family level, then between neighbours, then at the Indunas court, and then only when they are not resolved, they go to the chief's court. Now, the bill only talks about one traditional court. What happens to those other levels of resolution that don't seem to be resolved? The next question is, how is the area of jurisdiction of a traditional court defined? The bill seems to assume that the area of jurisdiction will coincide with that of a traditional community, defined in the Traditional Leadership and Government Framework Act. But we know that many of those boundaries are in dispute. For example, old tribal authority boundaries deemed to be the boundaries of traditional council are actually disputed. This raises the issue of different systems of customary law, because sometimes smaller groups have been placed under the jurisdiction of a larger group as a result of the old apartheid legislation. And those smaller groups have different customs. So the question of level is actually key.
I really feel that with the hospitality dialogue that the agenda spoke for about time, and there are
other ways in which you can bring, insert your issues into the process of the body, including by phoning Will Alani or me and or writing to us. But I'll give you a few minutes. Shall we have you, please?
Oh yeah, mine is very short.
Can you speak into the mic because we recorded it in the minutes or something?
Yeah, sure. Do you mind if I use your mic?
You might even have a verbatim transcript if you have to, but go ahead.
Okay, my name is Nyoko and I'm a student at the University of Cape Town. I'm still unclear on the domestic violence bit, but I understand that may come up later in discussion about gender. So I respect that, thank you. And one point on which I'm a bit confused on, it was made clear earlier on when the gentleman posed a question on separation of powers that the traditional leaders do not purport to be functioning as judges. And the constitution was a reason in due regard to Chapter 8 of the Constitution of South Africa, which deals with the administration of justice. So my question thus is, since traditional leaders do not purport to be acting as judges in lieu of separation of powers, how then does specifically Section 165 of the Constitution apply to the administrative of justice to the degree of traditional court? Thank you.
My question is to the department, that when you say you considered the Law Commission recommendations and all the submissions that they heard, they recommended on the basis of a lot of consultations that courts should be recognized at the level of the headman and the Induna and all those other levels. They also recommended that land be excluded from the jurisdiction of traditional courts because of the strong opposition by women. When you chose to recognize only traditional courts at the level of the traditional council and not to exclude land, could you tell us what your thinking was in rejecting the Law Commission's proposal?
Just very quickly, some of these issues will... can I suggest that if there's not reasonable consensus by the end of this public hearing, what we could do is what we've done in the Charter of Principles. Again, it comes back to the point of consultation. We will have two representatives from the Amakosi, and Kosi Mavuma, two representatives from the Amakosi, maybe one from the National House of Traditional Leaders, one from the Amakosi Majendri, two representatives of civil society, you sit in a committee meeting, and we proceed with the matter. So you could choose a civil society which group people you want. That's something that Alani and I and the committee will think about. So there will be ways of continuing the dialogue. But on the issue of where does the family end and the traditional authority begin,
I think Domenico came late, and he said that you covered that. He explained, so I don't think we should deal with that. Somebody else raised the same issue, we're not going to cover that. On the issue, the other questions he asked about the distinction between customary and ordinary court, issues of vulnerability, you can raise that. Where the voice of the people, we don't need to cover that, we agree with you. Okay. They are arguing that through the Law Commission, there's a lot of consultation. But that was a long time ago and so on. So I think on consultation, where the executive doesn't do it and they feel they don't have to parliament to do it, and we're inviting you to consider getting two representatives of each side as we approach this proposal. So can we deal with the other questions very briefly? And then if you want fuller replies, the department will give it to you in writing. Okay. Now the student, because she won't be participating, are you taking part? What's the guy's name from the... Are you making a formal submission? Because you're an academic and you have computers and... So respond more to the student, because he's got a lot of access to us. I think even though my phone number, we can get everything in the office and get it. Respond more to the student, because she is not making a formal submission. Is that right, my friend? You're not making a formal submission.
That is correct, yes.
So respond to her, maybe. The others have ways of me reaching me. Annika is raising a very good question. So is, in fact, what's his name? Ben. You know why? Because it's a useful thing. It's like raising this issue of areas of jurisdiction and related issues. So shall we go for it? I'm giving the department 5 minutes and that should be moving on. Thank you.
Can you also get ready to
just Mr. Chair, we have the view, we thought that 165, chapter 8, regulates dispute resolution by judicial officers. That's one point. We also argue that dispute resolution is not the solely responsibility of judges and magistrates. Elders, families, community leaders, teachers, whatever, every day, they resolve disputes. CCMA resolve labor disputes, not in terms of 165, in terms of Section 34. All that we argue is that there should be different systems. Not just courts. Commissioners are not judges and magistrates. They resolve disputes in terms of dispensation. Our argument is that traditional leaders and any other formal system elsewhere should have the power to resolve certain kinds of disputes. That's why we distinguish between 165 and 264 constitutional. And the few examples from the Gaza that we put on the schedule in terms of distinction between the traditional courts and the formal court system, we put the schedule only on those matters we strongly feel that they should be dealt with them, which are criminal. All the other matters basically are dealt with them. So it's curtailing jurisdiction basically. We say you can only deal with matters of theft to a particular limit or malicious damage to property, or you cannot deal with this, basically. And those are only related criminal offenses. But anything which is not included, basically, they do and they can deal with those matters, which are also obvious in the criminal system.
What about the issue of land?
The law
is
just excluded, but you have not done that in the story. Being the root of addressing the issue, you only go to the court when that doesn't get resolved. It's again the question that Ben also raises, this thing about levels and not addressed in the law.
We have said with us here, Chair, there are currently 925 head men and head women, countrywide. There are 1,655 head men and head women. 1,655. There are 850 senior traditional leaders. There are 12 kings or queens and queens. How does the system operate? Even a senior traditional leader, when the matter is referred to him or her, he or she don't take the matter to the court. The complaint will happen at a family level, where it doesn't go to a head. And then if it's not resolved there, it goes to this 1,655. They are not forming courts. They are called mediations, whatever.
No, I don't cover the ground again. It's really about disagreement about it, but you covered the ground. Okay, now the next point is very quickly. The student asked about separation of powers. They're not judges. What about Section 165 of the Constitution?
That's what I was covering.
Oh, yes. That's what you're covering now?
Yes.
Okay, all right.
That basically they don't resolve disputes in terms of restriction. Yes. And that discrimination is not solely the role of judge and magistrate, otherwise, we have a chaotic society.
All right, we have a lunch break, and you can take the baby and
What else? Very quickly, can you pick up as well? I don't know what are the other issues that we cannot deal with in your formal submission. Quickly, Robert.
I'm sorry, Chair. Just one thing that I want to flag, because I am not satisfied with the answer. Because the answer that says, no, it's questions of practicality in terms of spelling in that it can be applied. For me, it's still very problematic. Because if these traditional leaders, the king and whoever, are recognized by their community, why do you need a judge to swear them in? And I'm raising this because there's a particular philosophical argument that I would like us to consider, because if you argue that the system is coherent in and of itself, why do you need a confirmation through a different legal system? And it's not about whether it's a judge or a magistrate, but it goes to the heart of what you place traditional leadership in fact. Thank you.
Well, I think you raised one of the issues of policy that we need to address, normally. So we'll identify issues of policy that we will resolve towards the end. In fact, Golilani himself raised it. So let's note this down, Julian. This is one of the issues we need to deal with. Right there, this is what you want to say. I don't think the department needs to say anything. We know your point of view. For Parliament to decide now what we think about what Marisa is saying. Okay? JD, you want to come in?
Yeah, this is, I think there's a broader category of the relationship between the traditional court and the magistrate. So that point still is that, because there's other ones.
Yeah.
Are you moving on to after?
Yeah, very shortly. Yeah.
No, because I mean,
Chris, yeah, I'm coming to that. Yeah, I did.
He's still putting up on the net issue. Let me
can you, during the morning, Anika, are you going to be around when you leave? Yeah, he will reply. And in fact, there are some form or the other legal resources here. Yeah? By the way, welcome to the people who are here from KwaZulu-Natal and Northwest. Yeah, well, they'll introduce themselves when the time is appropriate. JB, you'll say one last thing before we move on.
That's the last point on the national community jurisdiction, which was said by the Congress. Look, we have been consulting there with DPLT. There are many disputes, some of which are still being resolved through specially set up commissions also. But what we do, in terms of the governance framework, they will determine the head of the national council and the national leader. And the minister must cognize that, because we avoid setting up other areas of the which will be in conflict with the ones that have been set by DPLT. But it's one area, I think, where we'll have to liaise strongly with DPLT to make sure that that's been consistent.
Julian, if you want to make a submission, come next Tuesday or tomorrow, okay? We'd love you to meet and we'll get another lunch. Now, can I just say a few things very quickly? I haven't asked a single question, you know, but there's one thing I need to know. Next week, when you come, or whenever we look at the bill, when the public is, or even while the public is here, by the way, the department will, at the end of the submission, the phase one of them, give a response. Not all of you will be here, but maybe you can make sure that two of you came down basically. You'll save you money. I care as a couple of close people, obviously, when they have a fund, that's what the traditional leaders, they will be here. Now, very quickly, what you see, basically, my point is, and it's purely mine, it's subjective. I don't know whether the ANC agrees with it or another party. Obviously, many, many things you say, JD, make sense to me. And we need a traditional system of justice. But it's a romantic, idealistic picture, I think, to some extent. What really happened on the ground? You see, what you're presenting is reasonably acceptable. But, you know, I live in KwaZulu-Natal. JG will tell me, we share the same constituency, I just maybe take a little bit. Big section of the middle of rural. You need to just go into the area, you need the Amakosi, the Ecosi Commission, and so on. We deal with traditional leaders all the time, and many, many times. We've gone to meetings where people set out their experiences. And it's not the romantic picture that you convey, Jamie. Maybe it's a minority,
part, that's what comes out. Secondly, on the traditional leadership and governance framework, we had large numbers of people here from traditional authority, not just Pune, but me too, and you too, who came and said, this is what really happened to us. So, I'm just raising it. One of the things that we need as a committee to empower minds is, this is fine, but how much of what you say is what really happened? And how much of what traditional leaders do has been conferred to them by the apartheid system for nefarious reasons? And how much actually belongs to traditional customs and indigenous systems? We had that major challenge when we processed the traditional leadership and governance principle. I forget, it was 5 years ago now, and I'm out of the loop, and between then and now, I've traveled this whole parliament and several committees, so, you know, I don't even have my notes anymore, which are somewhere with Ruth Baines inside already, including the charge, you know, mayor, deputy mayor of one of the districts. So I don't even have my notes, you know, but I remember that was a major issue. I also think you've got a policy framework, haven't you, which you've adopted. It should come to the committee. It's now a public document, so let's have it within 24 hours. Anyone of the public wants a copy will be given a copy by a lawyer to BC. I don't know why it's not introduced, because that provides your framework for your firm. Now, I don't want you to ask these questions. I'm just inserting into the debate issues that we will deal with in the committee. Now, I know JJ will shuffle and his body movements will say, Eunice is talking too long and so on, but it's going to save us time. Why? This committee, public hearings continue until 5 seconds before we vote on the bill. Okay. The formal cut-off point will be 24 hours before. You can't come 5 seconds before the bill and expect us to apply our money to it. But we will. If it's a reasonable point and it's earth-shattering, we will. We shall vote on the bill. Just give you one example. I'm saying all of this because I really want to rule out of order. If you want to waste time, it is your right, this is your parliament, to tell us, hey, you gave us only 3 weeks, and then you had a public holiday on the 27th of April, and then there was May Day, and then the day after the president declared it a holiday, and I was away over the weekend, and I couldn't prepare. Well, look, we abide by the rules of parliament in this system since 1994, 14 days to 21 days between the time a bill is certified and the time you make submission. Nothing errant happened. Within 24 hours of the building certified, that bad volley, we put the address to the Suezin, the City Press, the Sunday Times, and our company called what? Mail and Guardian and so on. But you will tell me, what about the rural communities? Well, there's a unit in Parliament that picks these things up and announces it in all the indigenous languages. I would imagine this bill, because of its relevance, would have been done. But if that wasn't done, we will follow that up. We have conformed to the rules for gender freedom. Now, we are saying to you, this is only the first day of many days of public hearing. No other committee does this. We go right from the office. Secondly, we're offering you two from the Armed Forces to be fair, two from civil society. Just to give you one example, Regional Court Jurisdiction Bill, we're not even going to vote on it tomorrow because a week ago, we're going to get another submission, so we're not going to vote on the bill tomorrow. So we're not going to approach this bill any different from any other bill. We will not vote on the bill if we think that at the last moment you have offered us something that is substantially new and riveting and earth-shattering and often it's not that we may say, no, you might think so. And we've also applied our mind to it and we've said no to it, but it's still coming. That's your right. This is Parliament. This is the democracy. On the issue of Gillian's wonderful overview, members, and if civil society wants to give it, then she's done a wonderful overview of the bill. You will have to reply to all the questions you put to me today. People have rung me this morning for more submissions, fine, tomorrow and next Tuesday, and then we'll see. Then, we'll ask JJ just to explain. You will recall the Black Administration Act of 1927. Clauses that apply to the traditional court system where extended to children this year. This bill is meant to take issue forward fine. In view of the rules of Parliament and the fact that it's Section 76 bill, we will not be able to finish this bill. It's impossible. JJ, quickly explain why.
So we can't finish the bill unless we fast track it. And I think it's not really the first rule to fast track. It is a Section 76, which means the provinces have legislative competency. And when it goes to the National Council of Provinces, provincial legislatures have to give mandates. So it will be quite a drawn-out process in the National Council of Provinces.
That will also involve, I'm sure, public hearings. That's an issue that I see from some of the submissions that has come up. But I would, obviously, the health does what it wants to do, but in terms of the Doctors for Life case and so on, they would really, I think, have to have public hearings in the provinces. So really, in short, we can't have both houses of Parliament passing this bill by the end of June, which is the date on which the Sections of the Vaccine Insertion Act fall away. So we will have to pass yet another extension bill extending those clauses, as has been done, I think, it's three or four times already. Three times, I mean, okay. So that's what will happen. And I would imagine, Chair, that the extension date would depend on how long it takes us, or how long we feel it will take us to process the bill.
Yeah. So the legislature, we will speak to the NPLC committee, my comrade here and I, but we would encourage them through the legislature and whatever to have public hearings in the provinces. So people who haven't come here will have that opportunity. It's better actually to have it down there than to bring people here. Then there are changes to the program. We will ask Lottie to speak to Cape Town-based people who can flip over to tomorrow, where they're not going to fly back between the four. The program is not structured because some of you were flights and whatever, and we'd organize it not thematically, it's a sequential structure, particularly honorable to a rational analysis. It's simply that we had to wriggle around because, you know, you're not wonderful. You don't know that's by civil society either. I mean, if you feel so strongly about this, well, it's been looming for a long time, but people will ring at 5 o'clock when poor Lolly is about to go in the traffic back to her house and say, no, I'm not coming now at 11, I'm coming at 4, and so on and so on. So, you know, you're not wonderful either. It's in Parliament, is it? So we have had to change this program to suit some of you because of your polite tact. We urge Cape Town-based people to negotiate with Lolly, give more time for others to speak. Finally, to explain the way we're going to manage between Comrade Bulalani and me. I will chair mainly till 1 o'clock, and then from 2 o'clock, Bulalani will take over, and I'll be here. But between us, we don't put our hands up. We just butt in and facilitate, right? Now, the department will, at the end of the hearing, but probably at the end of the day, we have time, respond to some of the issues. So you have some sense of where things are before you leave. On the issue of the rules and the management of the meeting, any questions? No, good. Let's go over then to Joachim.
My name?
You don't have to take the seat, because we know you and we let your staff, and frankly, 10 minutes is enough, but if you want to, please, can I sit in?
You have the right
to say you don't have enough time and so on. I've replied already. You want to use your 15 minutes telling us things we already know, that's fine. Just keep that rule. Legal resources are interesting. The first few pages bore us, actually. It's about things we know. It bores us, actually, about what's this thing the doctors will like. You know, we studied it, jump there, and go to the top. But if you want to waste our time, go ahead and talk about consultation. Okay? On the issue of consultation, any questions? No. So don't we all collect the hands of those who want to raise the issue still. Let's do it now quickly. Good. So no one's going to talk about consultation. We've done our bit, but we recognize that you need more time. Okay, let's go ahead. Thank you.
My name is Judith Van Stalkwijk. I'm the president of JAATA, the Judicial Officers Association of South Africa, and also the Chief Magistrate of Kenton Park. The Judicial Officers Association is a voluntary association that whose membership comes from the judges, the chief magistrates, traditional court presidents, senior magistrates, and magistrates. We welcome the efforts to affirm to enhance the values of the traditional justice system. We also welcome the creation of courts that are best positioned to dispense justice from a philosophy that has in fact developed in the systems that are recognized as acceptable to traditional communities. JAATA realizes that no legal system is perfect. Strives to perfect the conventional justice system has been underway for some time now. This has been in conjunction with strives to perfect those who function to dispense justice in those conventional courts. To do so, the constitution of the country has now come to occupy center stage as a yardstick towards a perfected outcome in the dispensation of justice and equity as would be envisaged in any democratic society. JAATA believes strongly that after centuries and centuries of undermining traditional justice systems and subjecting them to systematic first, we have now come to a decisive stage where we have shifted from an ill-informed questioning of the legitimacy of the traditional justice system. So at the beginning, An approach is necessary that will avoid the sections of rendering traditional courts to the extension of examples of magistrates or any other conventional courts. It is necessary to understand that the traditional court function in a manner that does not even begin to mirror that of conventional courts. In that regard, the traditional courts have to be recognized both for what they are and for what they are not. We also view that wrong approaches in traditional justice have always perpetuated the gap in the administration of justice, which gap can only be filled by traditional courts. The submissions that we'd like to make is with regard to the following designation section 4. Jarata submits that instead of targeting only the king, queen, or senior traditional leader as a presiding officer, this designation should aim at a panel of presiding officers for a specific traditional court. This is because kings, queens, and senior traditional leaders, as normal human beings, also have friends and relatives. Where a king, queen, or a senior traditional leader, or their friends and relatives has an interest in the matter, it should be possible to involve another presiding officer, who at the same time should not be perceived as an alternative and therefore an not so adequate presiding officer. While under normal circumstances, the king, queen, or senior traditional leader in turn shall handle matters in his or her area of jurisdiction, an ample complement of presiding officers should remain in place, in other words, a pool of presiding officers. King, queens, and senior traditional leaders have many tasks to handle. They have meetings and other appointments to honor. This may affect their availability for court purposes and thus impede capable in traditional court. If there is a panel of trained and tested presiding officers selected with assistance of king, queen, or senior traditional leader, this problem can be easily averted. The rules of natural justice, how the author of Bakhtin and the name of Udex in Propria Court can this be assured where we have a panel of deciding officers. Offenses by the king, queen, or senior traditional leader himself or herself, the strata means that the traditional justice system is also convinced the situation where no one is above the law. A way has to be put in place which shall not unnecessarily push offenses committed by kings, queens, or senior traditional leaders themselves to conventional courts without choice. Therefore, we suggest that one of the following two options can take an increased bench of two or three presiding officers chosen from the panel as we suggested previously. An extra jurisdictional appointment of a king, queen, or senior traditional leader from another area to preside over this matter. If this would be taking the traditional leader so voting, it should not answer either to the one in the front. The sessions of the traditional courts, they deal with section 8. To also view that in the majority of the traditional courts are and have always been subject to rules of collective operations within the institution and not subject to the whims of individual kings, queens, or senior traditional leaders. In most cases, it is the Royal Council for some formation which conduces to collective discrimination. This has helped ensure certain consistency and uniformity in the system. Jata therefore submits that it should be a royal council or some other formation that decides of the time and place of the court subject to the customs applicable to the community concerned. If I shall incident a particular custom in the way that some powers to the individual king or senior traditional leader, so it shall be. This will take up the interest of the king or senior traditional leader himself or herself as the interest of the individual matter. It is further suggested that section 8 be amended to read. Sessions of a traditional court are held at the time and place traditionally expected as a seat of a traditional court or at the time and place determined by the Royal Council and or deciding officer. The family law and domestic violence related cases to Harsha will let this one stand over and have a workshop pertaining to that. The role of the House of Traditional Leaders. Jata views that houses of traditional leaders should have a role in processes pertaining to traditional courts. This should run through like a thread, CREAD, from the information of the presiding officer, making input on the training needed and other relevant issues. Such an approach will help enhance the independence of the traditional courts. The same houses of traditional leaders should also play a role in assisting certainty and development around traditional rules and customs. We also recommend that in making regulations, the minister should do it in consultation with the House of Traditional Leaders. The interface between traditional and magistrate courts is vital to avoid the pace and rate of finalization of cases emanating from the traditional courts, getting negatively impacted upon the course of the dynamics and magistrate courts. As such, the case flow modality for appeals and reviews of cases from traditional courts by magistrates should be subjected to firm case flow principles. I'm handing over to Mr. Vincent.
on the issue.
Thank you, Madam. Thank you to the chair. The next point that you said, we said the need for thorough training, if I can just summarize the important aspects in the paragraph there. We do appreciate, of course, that there is a provision for training which has been left for the regulation. We are, however, of the view that since there appears to be a serious need for training, the BNLP itself envisages the need for training in constitutional law, criminal law, civil law, general principles of law, and even customary law. We are therefore of the view that this should have been covered on the BNL rather than just to be left for the regulation. Even if, say, it is left for the regulation, we are of the opinion that since this House did it in respect of Act No. 32 of 2007, Section 39, Subsection 2, that is dealing with the sexual offences, wherein there is a provision that once the regulations are passed, they should be brought before this House before the same can be gazetted or be implemented. We are of the view that the same can also be done because the need for thorough training appears to be quite great. The next point is in respect of concurrent jurisdiction. You realize the number of aspects that are disputes that are normally being dealt with by the small claims court. In terms of this bill, some of them will be channeled to the traditional court. Unfortunately, the bill does not distinguish which kind of disputes will now go to the traditional court and which ones will still remain to be channeled to the small claims court. We are of a view that this should be distinguished and there has to be a clear line rather than just to be left for parties to choose. Do we take our civil disputes to the small claims court or we take them to the traditional court? The bill is silent over it. Point number five is concurrent jurisdiction with the magistrate court. Section 6 of the bill gives the traditional court jurisdiction to hear and try certain criminal offences. In fact, there is a schedule in terms of which certain offences are tabulated theft, which is described, malicious damage to property, assault, and criminal injury. Just to start with, we're interested in criminal injury, which in terms of the schedule to this bill is described as follows: criminal injury, where the amount involved does not exceed the amount determined by the minister in the government. We do not understand how criminal injury, which according to its definition is an unlawful and intentional impairing of the dignity of another, we don't understand how the same can be measured in terms of monetary value. If the allegation is that A has insulted B using vulgar words, there is no way that pecuniary value can be attached to the same, or the minister can make an indication of a value to that. Our view could be different if this was referring to civil litigation attached to criminal injury. There is also the aspect of equality before the law. It has been dealt with in a lot of discussions. In instance, in this paragraph, we're talking of instances wherein, for example, as we indicated, a teenager who could be arrested, maybe appearing before a court in Israel where there are no traditional courts, and he could be facing maybe imprisonment, maybe for shoplifting or whatever sweets we may have stolen from ShopRite. And maybe another Mr. Rajbhumo who happens to be lucky, self-serve and is appearing before the traditional court, he knows that it's not going to get imprisonment as a punishment or sanction because the thing doesn't apply, only a possible fine if he is convicted. How about equality before the law? Does this teenager I'm referring to feel having equal treatment before the law as Mr. Rajbhumo? The other aspect is on whether does the complainant or victim to a crime choose which law enforcement agency to approach between the traditional court and the police or the national prosecuting authority. The prosecutors, of course, from the bill, it appears, will not be behaving a right of appearance before the traditional court. However, we also need to know, will the complainant be entitled, supposed, taking the matter to the traditional court? And maybe the accused is acquitted, will the complainant be entitled to also have the right to appeal, saying he wants the matter to be properly rather investigated by the police by the NPA. These aspects are just some of the questions. It's not like we have answers to all the questions, but we thought this can be dealt with and an answer will come through. Currently, as we speak, before the court of law, complainant cannot take a case on appeal, simply because that is against the rule of double jeopardy. And I choose it's not expected like, to be tried twice while he has been acquitted already before another court. So the complainant cannot, but in respect of this one, can the complainant do so? This I say because you realize that there is also an argument on the traditional court being tribunals or being
sorry,
the court.
You've used up your 15 minutes, but I'll give you some time. You see, you're a powerful stakeholder. You're Joasa, you know, and you can always come here. You have got resources and funding. You have access to the department. I have no idea, JB, why they bring in this to Parliament. This should have been done in your consultation project, you know. Again, we come back to this, you know. We're going to open up Parliament. You know what I'm trying to say? You are not the rural women's organization, Kalaimani, you know, who doesn't have access. You're a constituency body. You're talking to each other all the time. Why are you coming to Parliament with this? And, you know, you could have done this before we get into the public hearing. But if you're right to come to Parliament like everybody else, you've got 2 minutes. Thank you.
No, thank you. Thank you. We're going to like and what we're only honoring this when we were so invited. But I will jump on the other aspect. We will jump on the other aspect of our submission.
That's the list.
Okay, no. The other aspects are in the written submissions. I'm not going to deal with just one last aspect which we think is very important, if I can indicate, in respect of our appeals and reviews. Point number 8 and page number 9, they will talk about the language problem. It appears that there will be some recording necessary in the traditional court, but we are interested in what language will that be. If I can just give you a little background on why we have that problem. Currently, as we speak, if you are in a court, say the magistrate, prosecutor, and all the parties in a court speak, say, Zulu, you cannot, by law, try that case in Zulu, although all of you will be understanding each other for a simple reason. The case, when it goes on appeal, you may find a judge there speaks only English or Afrikaans. This matter was dealt with at some stage here at the Cape High Court, wherein the case was tried in Xhosa because both parties were Xhosa speaking. Yes, and the judge made a recommendation. In fact, in the case, we have it here that surely the question of language policy since 1994 of advent of our democracy has to be dealt with. We are of a view that if that is to be dealt with, not just for the traditional court, but for the court in general, then the solution will flow down to the traditional court. I don't think it will be doing justice if I don't allow the conclusion by Mr. Oberholzer. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay, over to the Royal Couple, okay? Oh, my God, no, you're taking a long time here. You've exceeded your 15 minutes, really. I'm giving you 3 minutes. It's not fair, really. Not for you. Especially those of you who haven't given written submissions, you can have up to 20 minutes. Some people come from the oral tradition and don't write. It's fine. We must accommodate that. You have no reason to take from it, quite frankly. Go ahead. So 3 minutes and no more.
My name is Donnie Lugerholzer. I'm the National Secretary of Joasa. And in conclusion, I just want to say that the implementation of this bill should be pre-costed to avoid pitfalls that we that were seen with a host of other well-intended pieces of legislation. A notable mind shift is also necessary for magistrates who will be involved in work relating to traditional court, because if that is not done, we shall see the ills of colonial and apartheid eras repeating themselves through this bill. If well implemented, this bill should assist greatly in ensuring an easy, affordable and prompt delivery of justice and of the benefits of many societies. Despite disputes stemming from rural areas and spilling into urban areas may need to be catered for. It is Joasa's view that through the assistance of houses of traditional leadership, some centers may be set up in urban areas to deal with some disputes where both parties submit to the structure. That would save them costs of traveling back to their villages where all the witnesses and parties find themselves in the urban areas. Thank you.
Have you heard of the department saying that you're going to be training and building? What other costs
So, at the end of this block, we will have a discussion time, and they can see it there. By letter of the Royal Faculty, I'm also a powerful stakeholder, and just set up the 15 minutes, and have access to computers and so on. Where's the Royal Faculty? There we are. Okay.
Thank you, Chair, for the sake of our saving time. We prefer to keep the formality. But for the record, my name is Mumati Abela. I'm in the office of the FOSI, taking care of matters legal for the community. We've submitted an extensive written submission, but we'll just read out a summarized version.
Whenever you've got slides which are a summary of what you've done in the way of a formal submission, can you give us a rolling review as well? Thank you.
I'll say that we will at a later stage submit what we were reading out as a record. We'd like to place on record that at all times it has to be understood that the bill has currently been create multiple solutions, and it will create a minefield of conflict which will lead to access of justice being denied to South African citizens. When one looks at the preamble of the bill, it neatly covers, as part of the bill's spirit, the ideal traditional justice system that links up customary law with constitutional imperatives and values. This approach by the bill also catapults traditional courts into the fold of the legal system of the Republic. However, restorative justice and reconciliation does not form part of the preamble, but part of the object and guiding principle. It is submitted that it is necessary, therefore, to include the notion of restorative justice and reconciliation in the preamble. In dealing with the definitions, we have the view that it will be important also to get a cross reading of the Communal Land Rights Act as well as reference thereto. Read jointly, of course, with the Traditional Leadership and Governance Framework Act, as this would as well deal with matters of territory and jurisdiction or geographical jurisdiction. And dealing with jurisdiction in respect of the various areas, we have the view that largely the bill, when it comes to dealing with restorative justice and reconciliation, that the bill defines traditional justice system as a system of law that is based on customary law and custom, and we submit therefore that this type of justice system needs to be further amplified and clearly set out in the within the context of the traditional of a traditional community's governance structure. There is mention of the Kotla or the Khoro in the bill, but there is not clear rule set out as to how these will interface with the traditional court. Perhaps I'm taking the structure and jurisdiction be confined to customary law and restorative justice. In doing that, exclusive jurisdiction will be established for traditional court. In respect of aspects of customary law or customary law jurisdiction, we have the view that this has to be properly established and developed exclusively for traditional courts as the first court of instance in customary law matters. This is an extensive area which will require each and every traditional community, that each and every traditional community should have a traditional court within its structures and processes dealing with customary law issues peculiar to it, thus developing this area of law, which over time could be codified and properly given its rightful place within the Republic's judicial system. It is submitted that traditional courts will be properly streamlined if confined to these two areas, as they are only an exclusive jurisdiction. It is further submitted that in respect of customary law matters and custom, when I'm taking what a traditional court system is, that traditional courts be recognized as forums which have inherent jurisdiction over the Kotla or the Khoro, which are headed by headmen or the Khosana, Therefore, in such matters, the court law sort of will be the same forum where a dispute may be resolved, and that's in respect of customary law and custom. And in dealing with other aspects of jurisdiction, criminal jurisdiction and civil jurisdiction, should there be overwhelming support of traditional courts being given additional jurisdiction? Specifically when coming to traditional courts, as it has been occurring when you look at the provisions of Section 21 of the Black Administration Act, which in a way finds its way into the bill. When considering the legitimacy of traditional courts and the authority to expediently deal with criminal matters appearing in the schedule, there is a need to review the level of sentence and punishment that a traditional court can mete out. It is submitted that powers of punishment and sentence similar to those of district courts be given to traditional courts insofar as criminal jurisdiction is concerned. This approach will eliminate double standards created by Section 10.1 of the bill, where offenders coming before a district court and those coming before a traditional court having committed the offences listed in the schedule are sentenced differently. And I think this was also highlighted earlier in prior submissions. It is submitted as well that this limitation of Section 10.1 simply erodes the legitimacy of traditional courts. It is also submitted that the traditional court structure be aligned with the current judicial system with a necessary limitation with respect to geographical jurisdiction and quantum. Traditional courts should not be confined to traditional law and custom only, but should in fact also be given jurisdiction insofar as matters in the schedule are concerned. Civil jurisdiction. The bill provides for traditional courts to deal with civil matters arising out of customary law and custom when considering the elements of confirming its direct import, subject to minor modifications. This implies that traditional courts cannot deal with matters which arise from common law or apply rules or provide remedies which are peculiar to that system. If they did, their judgments would be null and void for lack of jurisdiction. The section is specific in language, and this may signify an ability to decline jurisdiction under certain circumstances. It is unclear to us as to when and how these circumstances would arise, but in our view, this section encourages forum shopping, which has as well been explained earlier. It is submitted that there is a need to stipulate such matters in defining this type of civil jurisdiction, considering the fact that customary law and custom in many traditional communities has evolved to such an extent that there is a wide area that may be abolished or updated over the years. It is submitted that it will be beneficial and it will also expedite access to justice if small claims court jurisdiction is simply conferred upon traditional court, taking into account the geographical jurisdiction of the traditional court vis-a-vis the magisterial jurisdiction. This will enable the traditional court to assist in the extension of services rendered by the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development. And in this regard, magistrate courts should still be the courts of first instance in respect of absence review when coming to civil matters. We have also submitted that in respect of customary succession, though there is a bill dealing with customary succession, that to the extent that the traditional court jurisdiction would be excluded or would be within the purview of higher courts, that other aspects relating to customary succession also be dealt with by the courts, and accordingly there should be a cross reading of this bill as well as the customary succession bill. In dealing with the referral process, which we find in the bill, when considering the referral case mechanism in the bill, it is advisable to review that process as suggested in the bill, as it grants presiding officers too wide a discretion in referring matters from the magistrate court to the traditional court. This will assist in doing away with referral of matters from the magistrate court to the traditional court and vice versa. The referral process is currently stipulated results in a lack of accountability between the traditional courts and magistrate courts, and there will be endless cross-referrals whilst access to justice for members of the community will be delayed. and quickly dealing with legal representation. We believe it's another contentious issue which might lead to a great deal of constitutional litigation. There is a possibility that the bill may unfairly discriminate. This because it may violate the individual's constitutional rights as set out in sections 9, 34, and 35(3) of the Constitution. But the right to legal representation, like all the rights that are enshrined in the Constitution, is subject to limitation. However, on the other hand, the question that arises is, will the bill, if it becomes law, be of general application or not? And the answer is, it is submitted that it should be in the affirmative. If the subsection, this subsection is intended to curtail the proceedings of the traditional court, then the answer should be in the affirmative. In other words, you look at the expediency that would be given to whoever would be coming before the court. But if the object of a bill is to exclude legal representation merely because the courts that you are dealing with are traditional courts, then the exclusion is unconstitutional. The better view, however, would be to regard the exclusion as a reasonable and justifiable limitation of constitutional rights. Of constitutional rights to representation because of the nature of the traditional court or the level of education of most presiding officers, the litigants, and the witnesses who participate in these proceedings. It is submitted that it be considered that paralegals, junior public defenders, candidate attorneys, and maybe in dealing with criminal matters, possibly prosecutors who are starting off in the profession could be considered to assist in dealing with both criminal and civil matters when it comes to the aspect of representation, so that people's constitutional rights would not be violated. And then we also highlight some of the constitutional issues which might arise looking at the structure of the courts and where the courts are based or positioned. Traditional courts have been described by the bill as courts distinct from courts referred to in section 166 of the Constitution. This section would not, if challenged, pass the constitutional muster. The reason is that traditional courts are, in fact, and in law, part of our constitutional dispensation and an integral part of our court structure. For instance, section 165 states that the judicial authority of South Africa is vested in the courts. It is submitted that the term courts include traditional courts as well. It is our submission that the phrase are distinct from courts referred to in section 166 of the Constitution should be omitted from this bill. This submission is in line with our view that traditional courts are part of South Africa's constitutional framework and court structure. And just dealing with one matter, administrative, when it comes to the administration of fines which are to be imposed by traditional courts, and also how traditional councils must account for such funds, there is reference made to the Traditional Leadership and Governance Framework Act only, which in the broader scheme of administration of traditional courts may differ from the way the different provincial governments are administering issues relating to traditional councils and traditional communities. It is submitted, therefore, that there be a reference to the effect that such funds be accounted for through the Framework Act together with the Governance Provincial Leadership and Governance Act. And one last point on the interface with other government departments. We submit that there is a need for various government departments to be catered for in the bill. As we are of the opinion that government departments do not always approach legislative impacts in a comprehensive way, thus causing unintended consequences once a bill is passed into an act. For instance, the Minister of Safety and Security, we are of the view that there should be a provision as to how issues relating to court order lists will be arranged, as to how the effective doing away with tribal police has in fact sort of evolved in our various legislations. Ministry of Agriculture and Land Affairs, what we alluded to earlier with a traditional community jurisdiction or territorial area, there has to be a cross-reading. Ministry of Provincial Government, Provincial and Local Government, in support of various mechanisms relating to regulation, planning, service delivery and capacity of traditional leaders as they are the ones administering traditional councils. And possibly Ministry of Public Administration to look at whatever issues which would arise in terms of human resource development and so on. If that's our submission, but as I have said, it's more amplified in the submission.
Thank you. You shouldn't seek to be a politician because you've done it in 17 minutes. And it's very good. It's a very clear submission. Whether the committee agrees or not is neither here nor there. But it's a very clear submission. Questions from members first. We have a discussion time, and then it's lunch. And the department has replied to the issue that the two submissions have actually raised. Okay, so questions from committee members, in this case the public, come up. The background to this paper says that the Buckle King has a special support currently. Regulated by the Botswana Provisional Court Act, we have spoken of that.
That's part of the
negotiation. Yeah. This court that you have, I mean, is it in line with it, or do we have to change, you know, to file this particular vote now?
What happens is once this act comes into being, then you're repealing a whole lot of legislation. What they're doing, if you look at the end of the bill,
In the transitional provisions, Chapter 23, it sets out in quite detail how we get rid, how we deal with that very complex issue.
Just to follow up from thinking, I mean, the question that I asked the department, how does the bill change what is it already existing, and how is the bill, in the law of upcoming, how is the bill change what is existing
How would things change with the bill applying? They wanted more power, obviously. They wanted to see change. But the bill itself, as it stands now,
exactly.
Okay, we'll come back to you in a moment. Any other questions from members? Nope? Okay, civil society stakeholders, do you want to ask either Joanna or Royal Buffalo King any questions? Hey, maybe we've allocated too much of time. Well, maybe we can finish it up at 2. Great, okay.
Thank you. In fact, what we've done over the years was that when you look at the Traditional Courts Act, because there was such a long time where it was not repealed or improved, amended or improved, we found that in dealing with civil matters, the jurisdiction in terms of amounts that we could deal with was just so minimal that we decided not to hear any civil matters anymore. And over time, we've engaged with the local magistrate's court to try and assist us with some extension services in respect of small claims court, because it was just to, in essence, it amounted to us trying to administer justice being a waste of resources and time, because clearly, you know, you could only deal with matters where very low quantums were involved. I think in other instances where we would have to impose fines, I think it would be a fine of 2 goats or something like that. So we sort of tried to move away from that and focus largely on restorative justice and trying to mediate disputes and that sort of thing. But in essence, as I said, there has been a wide gap in terms of when that specific act was last amended to the current day situation. So in essence, that's why we also say a lot of practices and the way of doing things has sort of been abrogated over time. But the bill as it is will assist. I think in other instances where there would be changes would be in respect of provisions for resources such as tribal police and so on, and that's why we're saying it would be better to look at collaborating with the SAPS in as far as those issues are concerned as well, instead of inventing tribal police, which would also beg the question, where would they be accountable to safety and security, or to DPLG in terms of traditional communities, or to justice and constitutional development, because they will, in essence, be focusing on that aspect of the traditional court. So this, a safer approach would be rather to lean more towards the way current courts are assisted by the SAPS and so on.
Further questions,
Jason?
I mean, maybe just a summary, just to see if I've understood things right. It would seem then that the court hasn't really been functioning recently because of those issues of the limitations on civil jurisdiction and the limited amount of fines that should be imposed. You said it was doing more ADR, terms of dispute resolution. You also raised the issue of, is this a court or is it a tribunal? Which is something you also raise in your submission, but quite clearly you want something that is more a court. So would it be fair to say that up till now, you've more had a tribunal?
When you look at the makeup of the act that this bill was repealed, court becomes a court. Because if you would look at how, for instance, its panel would be made up, you know, it would have to be properly gazetted and so on. The only reason why we decided to do away with certain areas of law was simply for purposes of expediency, but also the effectiveness of administering justice. It just trivialized matters to that point. So in practice, yes, we have tried to look at how best we can assist, and as I've said, we facilitated with other departments. But in law, I think when you look at the makeup of the act, it would dictate that it has some level of enforcement. Because when we had, for instance, a tribal police in that statute, you would have the powers of arrest, the powers of detaining, and so on and so forth. But those are areas that we've tried to move away from in order to get proper alignment.
Yeah, this is the last point. No, I mean, I'm sure that the Act provides for a court, but in effect it seems that you haven't been exercising those powers. It has been more of a alternative dispute resolution tribunal type of body.
Chair, I have a question for Joasa. I just wonder whether in recommending that in addition to a presiding officer, that there be some kind of body, a council, I think you suggested, a royal council, to make sure that when the presiding officer is dealing with matters concerning his or her own family, that there are other voices there. I wonder if my question is, have you given sufficient attention to the question of checks and balances in the traditional system? We heard earlier there's a concern of separation of powers. How does accountability, where are checks and balances exerted in a traditional system where you don't have the kind of separation of powers we have in various society? And I must admit that one way in which accountability works is because power is also vested at other levels of the community. And that comes back to the question of whether sufficient attention has been given to other levels of dispute resolution, including at the village level or the neighborhood level, with the Induna. And you know what's happening, I think, with the traditional leadership act and the communal land rights act, and now this act, this bill, is a tremendous centralization of power at one level only. And it is undermining levels, mechanisms of accountability, checks and balances, which were integral to the traditional system. This is not actually a truly traditional system we're talking about. It's a distorted version, inherited from apartheid. So my question is, how are we, to Joasa, but also the rest of us, how are we addressing the question of accountability and checks and balances within this traditional justice system?
Okay. Thank you.
on that, I mean, the submission that JOASA made on 2.1 and 2.2 related to designation and this idea of the panel, is there any customary law precedent for that?
You know, the Law Commission consulted extensively around this issue of the composition of the court, and there was never any question that the court would be composed of one presiding officer as the senior traditional leader. The Law Commission looked at what should be the composition of the court and put forward recommendations, especially to do with the representation of women in that composition. And since you have explained to us that you took into account all of the submissions made to the Law Commission, and you took into account the Law Commission's recommendations, can you tell us on what basis you decided to ignore that whole debate around the composition of the court and the whole model that the court would not consist of a presiding officer but of an actual judge at different levels?
Thank you, Sir Josh. I just think it's that. I think the questions by the professor, they extend rather the questions rather than to focus on our submission. However, when it comes to the question of precedence, I think this deal as it is, it's also ushering new era to the traditional court, as they said, or they used to be during the times they operated. Because in most traditional courts, the decision in the traditional court did not necessarily solely lie with one single individual, but it would be a group of people in the court as they are sitting there, rather than just one individual. Our submission, if you see, we are rather saying, rather than training one chief or senior traditional leader, let's have more people trained. So when that senior traditional leader, for whatever reason, recuses himself, at least there will be a pool of a number of them to choose. This one can come in and do the work properly. Thank you.
How did you respond to this? Lawyer Buckle King, do you want to say something? In respect of, if you look at Clara, traditional leadership and governance framework bill, this bill, what we're having is a centralization of power. This is not consistent with an indigenous system, and if you go back to time, they were more than this. What's your response to that? And then the levels of accountability, how do you secure that? And also, of course, related to change of practice. Do you need funding?
Thank you, Chair. I will just want to make a few comments on the issue of designation to more to other role members of the National League. Section 4 of the Bill reads 4.4. The minister may, at the request of a king, see for national leader, contemplated in subsection 1 or 2. Any prescribed manner designate any headman, headman, or member of the royal family, having alternative serving office. As said, one, this bill does not change customary law. There's a precedent currently now, National leaders are not sitting in all cases. By customary law, they are represented always. There's never a vacuum, it was never there. Now we want to provide for them. All we're saying, we say, for purpose of accountability, with the first race. The second race must not delegate any other person from the royal family, because then the whole issue of training, competence, whatever comes into play. What I wanted to say is that senior traditional leaders are public office bearers. That's the first point. They are defined as such. like the president, etc. And we are in a constitutional state. We are governed by the constitution. Every person's conduct is subject to the constitution. So there have to be limitations to that power. In the past, before the constitution, their powers have been limited by except in terms of DAA, the president of the country was a super chief, which basically dictated that the president could limit those powers, etc. Now in the constitutional state, we say all the powers should be exercised subject to the constitution. That's why, as a startup, we've provided for an oath of office, because we say any traditional leader, any public office bearer, must be bound by this document in what they're doing at any point. It's the first point. I think what we hear here today is that it's where they take the oath. But the oath is basically to the constitution, where the supreme law. They cannot banish somebody out of the land when the constitution gives you a right to stay anywhere. It's not an example. They cannot exclude a woman from participation when the constitution says there must be equality. So that's our premise. That accountability is your constitution. The bill seeks to provide for that. So any other person who will be called upon in the absence of the national leader to perform this function must be designated, must have taken oath, must be bound by this document. So we've covered the issue of Juwata in terms of going beyond the royal housing. But what we're saying is, now, they've got a choice. Any other person will choose, and that's out of customary law. All the requirements of the bill is that this person must have been properly mandated by this system.
Is this really consistent? I mean, I see you're suggesting, it's actually a very general one. What I think he's speaking is a more specific answer, which is, okay, here's the Constitution. How many people really know the rights available in the Constitution? Now, what, apart from the Constitution, what other mechanisms are there in the law, as well as it is, that ensures accountability? Point one. Point two, is this consistent with a traditional system as we know, or are aspects of the bill more consistent with apartheid having conferred certain rights and certain responsibilities on the traditional system, and we are now appropriating and adjusting and adapting the apartheid system? Okay, very quickly, is this consistent with traditional systems as you know it? B is what accountability beyond the constitution? You don't have to answer now. You're not obliged to give him an answer now. We can give him it in writing. There's going to be meetings next week and so on. Think about it. Maybe it's an unfair question on you. You're four of you here. Well, one of you has disappeared. I hope it's not in the season because of the pressure from the public. Because it's only just begun. Okay, so, Melissa, I'll take you next. Ah, because you're not going to, I welcome you in your absence. And in your absence, I felt free to blame you for all the weaknesses in the tradition, leadership, and governance framework. But I'm not going to say anything. Okay, shall we go for the JV quickly, please?
Thanks, Chair. Most of the issues were one responded and not just said. Okay. That's my comment.
Thank you, can I get a reply? Is this consistent with the... Now, Annika asked, because I know an Annika from Sweden, interestingly, was a Swedish woman who came here to a PhD thesis. And me being as nice as I am, I said to her, fine, the deal is, with no researcher, you can come here and participate. Of course, you know Kanyana, remember. You can even come to the study groups if you're a social democrat, and the closest to the NDR structure, NDM, and Janet might disagree, are the social democrats in Sweden. And so she came as part of that. She wrote a book, out of it. I think you might have met her. But she's Annika, you know Annika. Annika says, the law commission says it shouldn't be a single all-powerful traditional leader. They did this out of an outcome of concerted negotiations and confrontation. The department hasn't taken that into account. Why?
Chair, we did take some element of the law reform commission to account. That's the extent to which we've considered it. But on a specific issue, the assessed failure on one of the recommendations of the law reform commission was basically modifying or reforming the traditional court system to be to the conventional court. We tried to take an approach which keeps them as far as possible to the customary law principle. I have here an act of, it does not touch our court act, and it defines a touch our court, and it answers some of the questions here. It says, for each tribal of the shall be a tribal court, consist of a chief, a headman, or a chairman of the tribal or community, as the case may be, and those members of the tribal community, as the case may be, who in accordance with the law and customs up to the said tribe or community are recognized as members of the court. Now, we wanted to maintain this kind of aspect. In itself, it's a convent, it's a forum of community. They are the members of the court. The traditional leader provides a leadership, facilitates and presides, and that role can be assigned or delegated to somebody who represents the person. That's what we said, we try to preserve in the bill. And we may not have been accurate in terms of doing that, but that's what we seek to do.
I think for now it's fine. Then you have to make a submission, is that right? Then you make the raise the question in your formal submission, give it to them before next Tuesday, so that they have enough time to respond.
Once we begin to say the minister there at the request of a king or a queen and so on and so forth, already that touches some of the issues that I raised by Ben about checks and balances. My understanding has always been that even the presiding officer at the highest level would work in consultation with the council. That check and balance one that I don't see emphasized here. Because once you begin to confer so much power on an individual, whether it's part of a traditional leadership household, royal household or not or whatever, for me that's the beginning of a particular problem. I raised a question earlier about the oath. And I suggested that whether you have the oath given, taken in front of a judge or a magistrate, that already means that your whole point of reference is very different from, say, customary law. I'll explain that later when I make my submission. It is therefore my submission without any fear of contradiction that the answer that is given and what the minister is saying in this is actually not consistent with the customary law as I know it, as I have lived with it, as it continues to exist in the community where we come from. The African, I can generalize here, do not work on the wisdom of an individual or the chosen few. By the time you establish a council, you take people who have grown in a particular system who understand that, and you take amaphakathi and a whole range of other things, including those who may contradict you. My experience of living with tribal, regional tribal authorities right now, we have a submission that comes from communities that are fine. Thousands and thousands of money takes me to this issue of one, I will say it here in Parliament because I'm under protection of Parliament, there's massive abuse of power that is happening in communities right now. Some of them come from traditional leaders. We have evidence to that effect. Two, that abuse of power has not begun now. It began in the apartheid system. My lawyer has just walked in. He once represented me in a tribal authority. I want to know the people who are fined right now by regional tribal authority for minor criminal offenses, which you call Schedule 1, whose stock test is taken. I want to know, if we pass this bill, what do we say to them about constitutional rights that they have? And I wanted to go back to the point that Ben raised, when we define a traditional community. Ben has raised a very critical question. What happens to minority groups that are subsumed in a particular area? I happen to come from an area that is part of something called Western Cumberland. At some point, issues of dispute came there about cultural heritage, and the people said, no, I'm not going to come. And for a long time, those people were subjected to the rulership of Western Cumberland. Now, these are some of the issues that I believe that make me extremely uncomfortable when we talk even about customary law in so homogeneous a way. Finally, I would not be comfortable with this bill as a citizen of this country, and certainly from the Commission on Gender Equality, until I want to know exactly the land question and traditional leadership. Because if we don't answer the issue of land question and the agrarian question, we are leaving out people that are very, very vulnerable, whose property is being taken as we speak. I therefore agree with the chairperson who says that what you are giving us may be the ideal, but let's face it, that our entire system has been corrupted by apartheid system and a whole range of other things in the process. How are we going to take it back? I don't think we can, but I think what we can do is going forward to apply this thing. I think the minister also has a lot of power in determining these things, and I think some of them I would like to see that power actually devolved to parliament. I would like to see, for example, if you talk about local government, let's put it on the table. I would like to see those kinds of areas of elected representatives in relation to inherited leadership. Thank you.
Can you, the Royal Buffeting, respond rather than department? Because you can come at the end, and it'll be useful to hear your point of view, because you're an actor directly in the field, whereas say you're representing the executive.
Thank you, Chair. I think with some of the submissions which have come forward, as I have said, in practice, we have sort of moved away from those issues where, you know, we would have to deal with criminal matters and punish members of the community and so on. But particularly where we are aligned in terms of the submission as well is in terms of land. But it should be understood that our reference to land speaks purely to issues of jurisdiction. To say, the minute you talk of a municipality which has wall-to-wall municipality, you will find at times that you have other jurisdiction on the other side which relate to magisterial boundaries and so on. And it was this cross-reading which we requested to say it will bring proper alignment and assist traditional courts to be able to administer justice. So our submission on the cross-reading of Colonial Land Rights Act and the Traditional Leadership Governance Framework Act and so on refers specifically to a specific territorial or geographical jurisdiction where traditional courts would have a domain largely.
Now, can I suggest something to you? What if somebody said to you, look, tradition and custom in this country, like everywhere in the world, does change too. And secondly, that what you have in this bill is an advance on what currently is the situation. And you should see this as part of an ongoing process. A few years down the road, maybe the system will look at again and some of your current concerns will be addressed then. So it's an ongoing process. What would you say in reply to this?
I would concede to your submission because, as you know, our submission simply says it is important to look at how custom and customary law is applied to specific traditional communities, and therefore it will be necessary at some point to look at how various traditional communities are structured in terms of governance, in terms of the way they deal with their members, and so on. Therefore, that area of customary law cannot be the same for a traditional community sitting in Limpopo, you know, to that sitting in KwaZulu-Natal. There has to be that specifics, you know, dealing with issues peculiar, customary issues peculiar to specific traditional communities.
Okay,
so
then
we
have to ask this, we must break down. Anybody else quickly? You can. Are there any issues that Monito raises that somebody has to reply to? And she will get the reply before 5 o'clock and certainly be carried on tomorrow. Let me just say a few quick things. One is that Kosatu will come tomorrow instead. Secondly, the Legal Resources Center wants to speak tomorrow. Is that correct? All right. That creates more space for Carl Quinty. Trust, are you here?
Yes.
Okay, so you will speak. And then Rural Women's Movement, are you here? Okay. Will I take over here?
the agenda committee is going to be enough. Well, now, we have cut into 3 minutes of our lunch time, but that's no big deal. We have arranged that the lunch, welcome Comrade Lydia, she will have a meeting, of course, I should have said earlier, of her committee, the joint committee, and take this agreement. And also, Comrade Mustafa is not well, so she's not here, she's part of the committee, we received her apology a moment ago. So we want Lydia, you can speak whenever you want, obviously. Right, now, what we're going to do is break for lunch. Can we finish with, the lunch is going to be within half an hour. Can we come back in half an hour, please? Secondly, the door will be locked here so you can leave your stuff here. Okay, thank you. See you at 7:30. Hold assembly. Can you just follow whoever knows where the whole assembly is?
C'est moi, je dis pas la lettre.